Well, thank you very much indeed, Bert and Maureen, for letting me come and talk to you. It's December 1998. I'm in the Cunard Hotel on Loch Promenade with the proprietors. Could you please say, Bert, your full name and date of birth?
Herbert Davidson Quirk, known as Bert, and my date of birth is 1912-38.
Thank you. And Maureen?
Mine is Maureen Ann Quirk. My date of birth is the 10th of 6, 1940.
Thanks very much. I believe that your mum was involved in the island's visiting industry as a cook. Can you tell me a bit about how she got into that, if you know, and where she worked, what it was like?
I can't tell you how she got actually into the trade. All I know is that she was here prior to the war, that's the 38-45 war, went away during the war to Liverpool, which accounts for my bit of a Liverpool twang, because I was at school there. My father worked on the dock in Liverpool, and as soon as the war was over, we came back to the island. The first time I can remember working and us living together as a unit, apart from, you know, in the winter in our own house, but in the summer we lived for a while in the Westlakes. Where she'd done the cooking, my dad was the head porter, and I went to Braddon School from there. Then after that, I don't know what's happened at the Derricks, she'd done that for a couple of years, and then we went from there to the Cliff View, which that's changed its name to the Derrick, and that's gone since. She worked there as a cook for a couple of 3 years. And then she moved from there to the Regent, where she was for Fred and Kathy Royal. She was with them. Fred was a town councillor, an alderman in the end, Fred. She was with the Royals for donkey's years, till that was at least about, I'd probably be about 20 when she left there, and then she went working in the casino as a cleaner.
So she moved around quite a lot between the different hotels. Was she like poached by different hotel owners looking for a good cook? Was a good cook always in demand?
Oh, I think there were in them days. Because the Westlakes probably catered for 300 to 400, and the Derrick was the same. Only the wages were garbage. The wages would probably be £2, something like that. You know, and in them days, of course, you had plenty of kitchen hands, you know. But she was the boss, like. But I remember Ted Powell, who was the owner of the Westlakes. He always cut the meat. I always remember him. He had a butcher's knife that seemed about 3 foot long, and he would just cutting haunches of beef, you know, thin as you could read the paper through them.
Yeah. What was it like being like a cook's son in the hotel? Did you live there in the summer?
Lived there in the summer, yeah. Because you went to school during the day, but then, you know, all day was just a holiday then, you know, once the summer holidays came. And the food was good, you know, you were never hungry, which is one good thing about it. But you were just treated as, you know, as family by the owners in them days, because, you know, the cook was an essential part of the business. Especially in the bigger hotels anyway, you know. More reliable than chefs who invariably got full.
And would they give your mum a room?
Oh yeah, she had her and my dad and me had a room to ourselves certainly in the Westlakes. And the Derrick, I recollect kind of living there, but we had a house in Old Spring Valley in those days, where old Mr. McCartan owned, where the Westminster Garage is now, down that way, you know, where the old co-op is. Yeah, that would be summer only. Like. And when she was in the Regent, even latterly, she had her own bed. You know, within a staff room, she had a bed, so if she wanted to lie down, she could go and have a lay down, you know, during the day once breakfast was over and, you know, preparation was done for dinner. That was one of the cook's things.
Must have been busy for your mum in the summer. Did you see much of her?
No. Well, you could see as long as you didn't get in the road. You know, in the kitchen was a very, very busy place. But you learn to, you know, you learn to look after yourself. You know, especially in the days when you were still at school, and if you weren't living there, if you were living, say, at, you know, at no Spring Valley. Well, then you've done your own cooking. Or, you know, there's always somebody to look after you. You know, you never heard of hard parts. And, you know, and nowadays, of course, everybody drunk as well, don't they? You know, mum and dad would have a few bevvies and that, you know, so when they'd finished, because it was about a 12-hour day in them days, minimum.
And your friends, when you were a young lad, I mean, were many of their parents in the hotel business, the guest houses, or...?
No, funny enough. I lived in Old Spring Valley, and I think there was only one, I can remember two women who actually worked in the hotel trade. One of them worked for Tommy Kringle in the Minyadon here on North Promenade, and Mrs. Kane, her son's still alive. Richard, that's in Old Spring Valley, and the other one was a Mrs. Kenny, who became a Mrs. Moffat, a French lady. They done cleaning in them days, you know, but the rest were all just all pure Manx, worked on the farms and on the roads.
And what was the atmosphere like on the promenade in Douglas in the season? Can you remember what that was like?
Magic when I was a kid, yeah. there were recollections of watching the Prisoners of Wars go back in the very early days, but then that was shortly before we went to Liverpool, where I, you know, had a couple of 3 years schooling. But when we come back, of course, it was mad. It was May, and you know, the place was heaving. Everybody wanted to come on holiday, I think, and the place was just heaving. It was that way up till the early 60s, before people found somewhere else to go. I mean, every hotel was chock a hole. It was a good life.
Thanks very much. If I can just now turn to Maureen. Now, you came into the hotel trade from Wolverhampton, from England. Can you give me a bit of background and say, how did you come to end up living on the Isle of Man?
Briefly, because I got married to a Manxman. And he was in the Navy when I met him in England. And the intention was for him to move back home. And his mother actually took over the original single house of Cunard and to train Peter into the hotel trade, and that's what we both did when we got married. We came over, and that's where we started all the groundwork from. So you were a general dog's body then. You did everything, absolutely everything, whatever was needed to be done, you just did it, and you didn't ask questions, you just knew it had to be done, you just got on with it.
Can you tell me what your first impressions of the Isle of Man were like, and of the hotel?
Oh, I loved it. It was incredible coming to the Isle of Man, because it was so busy. There was such an atmosphere, you know, with all the holiday makers. It was incredible. Totally different when it went quiet in the winter, of course, but you got used to that. And I must admit, it took me about a year to settle, although I was very impressed with the island, because I was from a big town. So it was quite a change, quite a cultural change for me. But, you know, you just got on with what you knew had to be done then.
What was it like coming into helping to run a hotel very quickly? I mean, after the first year when his parents were there, you then had it on your own.
We then did it.
Having previously done secretarial work, what was the? How did you feel learning that new trade?
I was interested. I love meeting all the new people. It was a great pleasure to me. You know, I really enjoyed it. Obviously, you got tired because of the hours that you worked. And in those days, you were doing the 3-4 meals a day, full board as it was now. And you didn't get much chance of a lot of rest, so you snatched it for an hour in the day. It was a normal thing then. Hoteliers had an hour in the afternoon when they had to rest. And
then
you got up. I mean, everything had to be, the clock was your boss. You had to work everything to time, you know. It was, and you just, as long as you kept to that strict timing, you know, you were able to do things. But you were on call virtually, as you are now. You're on call most of the day anyway, you know.
So what were the things that you particularly had to learn in a hurry? The new skills you had to learn fast?
Well,
this'll hit
really. I mean, I'd always helped out when I was at home on things, but it was on a certainly different scale to what it was in the hotel. One thing that did shock me at that time when I came in was the fact that you still had chamber pots in bedrooms, that you have to change, you know, you have to empty if they were used. Thankfully, not everybody did use them, but there were the odd occasion, and that came as a bit of a shock to me. But there again, it needed to be done, so you just got on with it. You did it, you didn't question it. You may have moaned afterwards, but you didn't question it, you got on doing it.
What was the hotel like when you first came in? I mean, were your impressions that it was modern, old-fashioned, or how do you think it was like?
Well, really, I had nothing to compare it by, because we'd never stayed in hotels as a family. We'd always gone on caravan holidays, so I had nothing to compare it with. I mean, obviously then the hotels were the majority. Well, I don't know of any other than big hotels that had their bathrooms, you know, attached to the bedrooms. They were all basic bedrooms with a sink, and that was it. You had a toilet on the end of each landing, and that had to cope with between 50 and 60 people, you know, so you had three toilets. I mean, I've seen the changes since I came into it, you know, so I've worked it from the basic, if you like, seen all the changes.
It didn't have one on the top landing,
so anyone that was in a bedroom on the top landing had to come down to the second floor.
And
we had one bathroom on the ground floor.
Yeah. That was next to the bar.
That was
we had Yanks, because it was called Cunard. I can remember Yanks coming in, and of course they bathed every day. Well, you know, you get all these English people in the bar shitting, what on earth are you doing? You had a bath last night. It was pretty rough, and the second floor toilet catered for 48 people. That was because in them days we had four rooms on every floor, didn't we? With four double rooms.
Yes, they were tiny. They just accommodated. They had a bed.
Front. Yeah.
They had a bed, a wardrobe, and a dressing table.
And a wash basin.
As well as the wash basin, of course. And as I say, the cupboard was built around the wash basin for these chamber pots. They are forever imprinted on my brain.
We've still got 12 of them in there.
I might ask if I can borrow one to take it about to you. Seriously.
Yeah, no problem. We'll have to watch the bloody thing, because they've been in there for 30 years. You have to think it was only a single unit in that time, but taken by 54 people.
It was a single unit, so how has it changed, and when was it expanded?
78 to 79. 78
and 80. We bought Silver Sands, which used to be the Alma, which the original name on it is Ailsa Craig.
Ailsa Craig.
I've talked to a lady that used to have work in Bancroft's Alma, interestingly enough. Was it
Bancroft's Alma? No, it's
was
a different one.
Different Alma.
Mm-hmm. No, that's different. On Broadway, that one.
This is Kane's Alma.
This is Kane's Alma.
Mr. Mrs. Kane.
He's still there.
Mr. Mrs. Kane, yeah.
Didn't he look?
I remember, yeah, she died in the business. And when the first year I came over, I saw two deaths on this promenade. And I remember thinking how old those people seemed to me then. And I thought, I hope to God I'm not within this business when I reach their age. But
fast approaching
the age that they were. And I can see now how it was that they were still within the business. As difficult those days, I suppose, to get out as it is now.
It is now,
to sell now.
Why is that?
Well, I don't suppose it was probably that difficult in them days, but they weren't making enough money. The bigger hotels on the far end, they changed hands quite easy. I think these smaller units here were more or less family run, weren't they?
Yes.
And
it may have been passed down from, from parents to children. And
yeah, well, he didn't actually. Jack's son was a policeman, isn't he?
Yes.
He's retired now, Sergeant Kane. He was in Port Erin for a while.
It was.
So when you did your expansion, were they very happy to sell up?
They'd gone. But it was didn't belong to them then. It was empty. If we could have bought it.
Oh, Mr. Kane he'd sold to a Mrs. Winnie Gray. She unfortunately lost her husband while she was still within the business, and whilst she had her daughters and sons still living with her, she coped okay. But then, of course, they married and went their own ways, and it became more and more difficult for herself. And it was she bought a cafe business out in Peel, and she tried that out and preferred that way of life to the hotel trade. I think she made more money in it, to be perfectly honest. And she'd had the silver sands up for sale a couple of times and had withdrawn. And then
every
this
time
she
made an
was,
offer, she withdrew.
That, this time she was rather more serious about it and offered it to us again. And so we decided we would go for it. And at that time, you see, business was thriving. Absolutely booming with numbers.
79. We had by that time, of course, converted this. This was no longer the
basic
room.
We'd already converted
it. We'd unsuited and showered.
With room
by 1979.
Yeah, by 1979. 78.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
would be, compared to some hotels, quite
oh,
advanced
I,
at the
we
time.
We got called lunatics.
Oh, yeah.
They
told
yeah,
us
they
we
were
lunatics
stupid.
To do it.
Can you tell me more about that at the time, what it was like doing the conversions? And
well,
what
we one of the silly, well, it wasn't one of the silly things. One of the things we did do first was we put showers in, thinking that people, you know, were in modern days wanted showers. And anyway, you know, to be honest, you know, most guys peed in the sink anyway, and it was in the room that went to loo.
It wasn't their priority, it was toilet.
It was and really, putting the showers in was daft, because we then suddenly realised, you know, even though we'd put more toilets in by this time, and we'd actually lessened the amount of people, we'd started by this, we'd put toilets into the family rooms and we'd just put showers on the side rooms, but knocked from four down to three. So what we ended up by doing was we quickly realised that they wanted ensuite as well. So we started at the top and we came down and knocked them down to two rooms in most instances. So then we had this one house full of ensuites and we had another
basic.
House to sell, basic. So
it's difficult.
We just broke that down into bits. We shattered it literally. We took the bottom
we
floor
just amalgamated
out.
It basically.
Yeah, we made
that
into the dining room, the basement where we were in this side. We made that into the dining room full length. The bar was the next floor, and we knocked them down to what 14, 23 rooms down.
We
to
had
14.
23 basic rooms on
in
the other house.
We knocked them down to 14 en suites.
And which rooms were easier to fill, the basics or the en suites?
Oh,
the
no,
en
suites. Because we never charged any extra, and we still don't. Well, you know, we just couldn't charge any extra because we were en suite anyway. You know, so we set our prices.
I think we had a slight difference in that first year.
On the first year we did, didn't we? We probably ran a pound or something cheaper.
I think because when you'd already quoted a tariff.
Yes. Yeah, that was it.
At that time, you know.
And while we'd got a lot of them done, we hadn't got all of them done, had we? We'd done the first and second.
We didn't
floor
do anything. We
didn't.
The first year. First summer we worked it as a double unit.
Yeah.
We had one side of the house was en suites or showers. And that was basic.
Basics, yeah.
So I think
that's
there was a slight
that
area.
Must have been interesting to have had both at the same time and to hear what the
terrifying.
Visitors... What did the visitors say?
Oh, well.
Did they give you comments about one or the other? And what
oh, no, they knew
them?
What they were getting
they've
before
been,
they booked. I mean, they knew whether they'd ordered the Ballon Suite room or if whether they... At that time, people were happy enough to take basic rooms still, because don't forget, a lot of the other hotels here
they
were all
still
basic.
Still all basics. You know,
there weren't many had converted to having ensuite bedrooms at that time.
So what percent do you think would have been in the same condition as yours with the modern ensuite in 78, 79?
Pretty low.
2%.
Mm-hmm. Pretty low at the
pretty
time.
Low, because we were just called idiots, because, oh, you know, it's your rooms that make your money. And maybe it was, but we got so much happiness out of people saying, ensuite,
mm-hmm.
oh, fabulous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
me,
you know, so we've never regretted doing it, because we always wanted to go, and we've always gone to a hotel at Fedderland Street. So,
we were just glad that we did a lot of our conversions at the time that we did, because
yeah.
it got, became far more expensive.
Oof, yeah, the prices were
massive.
We were doing $250 to put an ensuite in. Where, you know, I mean, people are still doing them now, and it's cost them $2,000 to $2,500, you know, for the same thing, so...
But
we
did it all ourselves, you
yeah.
see. We didn't.
Our oldest son is a plumber, and you know, we just knocked everything up and done everything as we.
And he kept, when we amalgamated after the first year, he actually came into
he's
the hotel
into the
with
business,
us.
And he's still into the business
he's
with us.
He's
still
into the
so.
Business, you know. So, I mean, to do any type of work now, you have to try and you do it yourself if you can, unless it's a particular job that you're just not able to cope with. You know, electrics are a bit funny. But Nigel's very, very good with the majority of things in that respect, you know.
So is it something that you, did you always intend it to be like a family business, and your son, did he happy to come into it?
Not originally, no.
It's just happened, it's one of those things, you know.
He just expressed the desire to come into it when we went bigger. We couldn't have done it on a small single unit.
I was out working there as well, so it was, Maureen was running the hotel side of it as a single unit during the day, which meant she was doing all the, because she was doing breakfasts, she was doing dinners, because she was probably one of the first on the promenade as well to go
evening dinner,
bed and breakfast.
When did you drop doing dinner?
I can't remember.
At 59,
60. No, it wasn't. It was in the 60s.
Certainly
in the
60s, because I can remember.
I can't remember the date, but
I remember reading one of the old brochures which said, you know, that there are so many miles of unspoiled roads that aren't used properly. You know, why not bring your car and stay at the Cunard and don't be tied down during the day? I can remember, you know, seeing that advert in one of the old cars.
And it did full board. It was hard going, but then you had youth on your side then, obviously, which helped a great deal. But I remember, you know, sooner got breakfast, so if you prepper now, you were prepping, you had your dinner at lunchtime then, if you like, and then you had it high tea, at tea time, 5 or 5:30, whatever it was, and then there was always a supper table. I can always remember this big supper table. This was the first year when my mother-in-law still had it, and this is the way she worked, you know, and because her second husband, he'd had a lifetime in hotels, and they were showing us the groundwork and everything, what happened, and I can remember these big pieces of cheese and the cheese biscuits sat on this big supper table, and the people crowded in. They didn't want to miss that supper because it was all included in their tariff.
Something for nothing.
Yeah, they didn't miss that at all. Memories of that. And I thought, my God, they're like pigs at a trough, the month. The way they
I remember Chris James thought about that a few years. He gave them salmon sandwiches, and this night he would run out, so this woman went and complained to the tourist board that there was no salmon sandwiches on.
Mm.
So they came to see Chris and said, excuse me, Chris, how long have you been doing these salmon sandwiches? He said, well, since we've been in for 10 years. He said, you don't have to give them that, you know. And this woman's face dropped like a clog.
Was
he still in it, the Rydal man? So he had a single house then, like, but he doubled up the year after us, didn't he, Chris?
Yeah, the tourist board were pushing in those days for people to make into bigger units.
Bigger units, an upgrade.
Because they offered so much backing for this, for loans for this and loans for that.
Did you take up on that?
No.
We took a government mortgage, yes. But the only problem with the mortgages and the loans and the grants that you get off them is that the length of time that the payback is. You know, you can be in the business 14 years and 11 months, and if you've had a loan for that long, it's still they have the 1 month that's short, they still won't pay back on, you know, which is diabolical, really.
No,
so
the grants are the things, aren't they?
Yeah, the grants, that is, on the grant side of it.
The grant side, I mean, we've known people who've had took grants out, and when they sold the business, you have to pay back
everything, every penny
everything
plus interest.
And it's caught a few people out.
Guy next door.
It was a guy next door, the Kensington, that when they sold, they had
gone at 7 and had to pay 14,000 back.
So what do the hoteliers generally feel about the government sort of grants come loans programme?
There's
nothing available. They've run out of them, and they just tell us there's nothing available.
I mean, at the time, it seemed a fantastic
from 86, which you can take away within that, look at your leisure.
It was fantastic because people didn't have the money behind them.
Yeah.
And
it needed doing
to do all the changes and improvements that the industry demanded at that time. People had a good life living within the houses, because I mean they were full virtually. You knew from February by your bookings what type of a summer you were going to have, and you were virtually full. If you didn't know by then, you know, you were having a bad year, because people booked early then, but they don't know, they can book up the day before or anything now. But, I mean, it was people had a decent life living in it. They didn't make great big fortunes unless they were very intensely clever people. And generally those that were well off hadn't put an awful lot back into the place. This is what was wrong. This is why the Annaman, the guest houses and boarding houses as they were now, needed so much doing to them in relatively late years, because the money just wasn't spent on the property.
Do you think that people should have been more astute and spent the money earlier, or do you think they genuinely were caught unawares? Why do you think they didn't spend the money until the late?
I think they
days?
Milked it.
That's the truth.
They milked it.
I think
yeah.
one of the few hotels possibly prior to us had en-suites was the Claremont. And I don't know who put them in. There weren't that many in it, but there were certainly probably 7 or 8, maybe even 9.
It came about because people's own standards then started
yeah,
to improve.
To improve, you know.
You know, let's face it.
I mean, we wouldn't, you know, I mean, we slept in here for years. No, this bedroom in the summer.
We didn't have a permanent bedroom.
Never, we didn't have a permanent
slept
bedroom.
Slept upstairs on the first floor in the winter, and then everything had to be carted
down here.
You
know.
Slept down here in the summer.
Behind a barrier of wardrobes, you know, we slept the field of wardrobes there, a wardrobe, and I caught up the bed in the middle. And, you know.
And just moved on the time. It was exactly, it's been a lot of changes.
Yeah.
So, do you think, when did you mentioned people had higher standards, when did you first begin to think, people want more, you know, was that something that perhaps for Maureen, because you were in the business for longer, was that something you felt from a very early date, or did that only start to be in your mind a few years after?
I think it was generally in the 70s, I think it was, because we'd done the conversions, hadn't we?
Yeah. I think when we, if you think on it, we got married in the October and we went to Spain. And Spain was, you know, Spain was still bouncing in them days. And Spain, you know, in September when we were closed and on our honeymoon, and Spain was still bouncing, and to see the hotels there. And you start thinking to yourself, good heavens, you know, maybe we should be thinking of this. You know, can't give them a balcony, but we could give them.
It was done slowly.
Just,
we paid it. You didn't get any loans grants
no.
then. Everything
no,
was paid. You paid for it. So you did it so many
you know,
a year.
You had to. You know.
It was over a number of years that we completed the conversion.
Well, when we first got married, my wages from Incoop could cover the staff wages. You know, because I was working in New Orleans for rotten hours, like it was crazy. I would come home sometimes 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, get washed and changed and let Maureen go to bed because she'd been up since 6, you know, with the breakfast and stuff like that. And I would do the bar then till maybe 2. Something like that, you know.
It must have been quite a strain. I mean, you know, just, I hope you don't think it's a rude topic, I mean, but just the hours and
the hours.
Strain
yeah,
on the marriage of running the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
It's
just strange as a passing the night, like, you know.
Yeah.
Was that something that, again, I please feel free not to answer, was that something that was a strain on your first marriage? Was it the hotel itself, or was it just a question of personal?
No, that wasn't. No, had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
That was a personal thing.
Yeah. But,
But it is, you have to have a strong marriage to carry these, to be in these businesses for numbers of years. I mean, there's so many marriages that did collapse within the industry
yeah.
because the strain on it was incredible. You know. I was just a bit different because he was out working in the day,
yeah.
so he wasn't...
Wasn't that involved?
He wasn't
involved
so
in the
involved.
Day-to-day running, you know. I, as I say, we'd come home, get washed, changed and shaved.
Ships in the night,
you
then
know,
he was home. We didn't see each other.
Yeah, you know, I'd say, hey, come on, kid, you get yourself to bed. And, you know, the only time I would see her would be Saturday from about 6 o'clock, wasn't it? That was the one early night
Saturday.
We had. And then Sunday... you know, get called out Sunday even to come, you know, people run out of stuff and I'd go out and get the stuff with them.
TT period was,
yeah.
race weeks were the best
yeah.
for him in
so
that
So you,
respect.
Would you feel in a way for you it was better not to both be deeply involved in the hotel at the same time?
I don't
time
know.
Or
I think
at that time I would
yeah.
say yes, it was
yeah.
better.
Yeah, well, but, you know, I think it depends how you are, you know, I think if you love one another enough, you'd just put up with anything to... Just say, yeah, you know, we've got a home to make, and you know that's the way you go out, isn't it?
And were you delivering to a lot of hotels and guest houses?
Oh, nearly every hotel and guest house that had a license was delivered to by Incoop. It was just those things, you know. It was a very, very busy little company in Coo. I had probably, I'd suggest, have about 95% of all the small hotels, and you know, maybe the breweries didn't want them, and we seemed to get them. And we had our fair share of big ones as well, but we certainly had 95% of the smaller ones.
You could have named all the hotels along the front at one
yeah,
time, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, when I was 10, I knew most of the Loch Promenade, because, you know, Jimmy Curtis would say, well, how much milk could we put into, you know, we didn't do the village because that was done as a separate entity, but then we would have the Greenwood and all those little houses along there, you know, right through to the Athol and then the Regent through, and he just knew them all by name and he knew who was in them, you know.
What sort of things did you see as you were doing your deliveries? Were they in Coop, and you know, you must have got on good terms and probably seen some quite hairy days in the kitchen,
yeah,
and things like
well,
that?
Well, that's not spoken about, some of the slights you saw. I mean, you know, especially when you're in hotel trade yourself, and you have to think, I was president first time in 1978, I think. So most people were in the hotel trade then. When I was first president, there was, in the association, there was probably about 300 members. We probably had 300 members on the association.